Hi, welcome to Musings with Monse, a podcast where I have meaningful conversations with all kinds of artists. Musicians, poets, photographers, and other creatives share their honest stories, touching on the duality of being creative, the pure joy of making art, but also the particular struggles that come with it.
And honey, there's no way that I'll ever know. Oh, everything about you, but oh, how I love what I do. And honey, I love what I don't know too.
In this episode, I'm talking to Steve Varney. Steve is the guitarist for Gregory Alan Isakoff and is also the leader of Kid Reverie, a rock band out of Denver, Colorado. We talk about what it's like for him being a touring dad and how technology helps, about emotional rebuilding, turning towards music during the hardest times, and touring with his best friend and neighbor, Gregory. We also talk about his stutter, which he describes as an uncontrollable vulnerability. Steve is a good friend of mine, and I think the world of him, and I think after you get to hear this episode, you will too. Thanks for being here, Steve.
Well, I love being here. This is quite a room, and I love that we get to have the time to chat today.
Yes.
Yeah.
It's so good to have you.
We worked it in.
Yeah.
At the exact time that you initially offered to do it at.
Right. It worked out perfectly.
Yes.
Okay. So to start off, you know, I'm going to do a little bit of an intro for you later on so everyone can know who you are, you know, and all your accolades and whatnot. But I want to really just have you tell us your story, both professionally and personally, just what makes you you and whatever you want to tell us.
Well, I just had Alex. I don't know if you know her. She plays with Sarah Cahoon. She's basically a musician buddy of mine, just asking just last night, like, what's your life right now? And my answer was I said something like, records on top of records on top of being a dad and just like trying to have a personal life. Like, that's it. It really felt like a quick and easy way to answer the question of who I am right now. And because Gregory and I ended up making records simultaneously. And so it's just, there was a very large creative period, and I hadn't released my own music for a few years there. There was some like emotional rebuilding to do and all that, like based around that music. And now it's all out and it feels wonderful. But there was a redirection of concentration that needed to happen. And it's kind of all about Greg's music right now and like being the part of that I need to be and just trying to play really well. And it's going great. We rehearsed more than ever for this tour, and I'm loving it. We get to play really great shows right now.
You're a busy guy right now. You're doing so many things. You're wearing so many different hats, and you're doing your own, as you mentioned, your own project. You're playing with Gregory, and you're a dad. And I wanted to talk a little bit about being a dad. Also, your daughter is just the coolest kid on the planet.
I agree.
Yeah. She's amazing. I got to see her a couple days ago. I might have told you this story already, but you know, she just is like has these one-liners that are amazing.
Yeah, I know.
Yeah, and we were just hanging out on the farm, and she was wearing this little this t-shirt that was like had tigers on it, and she was telling me how she hates all bugs. And she said it doesn't matter how little they are, she hates them all, and she's scared of them. And she said that's why she's wearing the tiger shirt, because bugs are scared of tigers. That was the cutest thing. I just adore her.
I love that.
Yeah, she's amazing.
I love that logic.
Yeah. Oh, that's so sweet. You know, I just remembered, actually the first time I met her, we were, I think it was when we were making some pancakes together. And the night before, she was showing me, remember the Geico things she had printed.
Oh my gosh, yeah. The Geico ad.
The Geico ad. It was so sweet because she had it, the Geico ad. I don't know if she still has it up, but it was up like next to her
bed? No, that wave passed.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
The poor thing. She had it up and she was showing, she really wanted to show me the picture of the Geico commercial, you know, the ad. I mean, for her, it was just a cool picture.
Gecko reading a newspaper. Exactly. And she thought it was just hilarious. And she,
yeah, and it is.
I did like it was this relic that she had found and was so special to her. And,
yes. Yeah. It was so sweet. Because then she ripped the paper a little bit and she was so upset.
Oh, yeah.
You know, and I remember it was like kind of profound for me because I thought, you know, how it's so interesting how children are just so kind of raw and real about our emotions, you know, and when you're little, you just, you know, she's so upset about this Geico ad, but it's not really about that, you know, it's like whatever else she's going through, but it comes out that way. And how just as adults, we're sort of that way too, you know, but we have this sort of filter.
It's like learning what a possession is. It was, right. Yeah, it was like this thing that when there was a little tear in it, it was like we couldn't continue our day in any right. in any form until right. it was taped up and taken care of. And now it's like in the garbage and she doesn't even think about it. Like, it just, yeah, right. it's just, it's gone.
And
it's passed.
Exactly. So sort of with that analogy, you know, it being torn up and you mentioned this and just now and also in your Kickstarter video, which I want to talk about as well, about going through a really rough period of your life not that long ago, right? And so that was sort of a terror in your life, you know? And how has going through that, and I mean, now you're in such a good place, you know, and it's just saying how happy you are now.
Yeah.
I have so many wonderful things going on. How has that really strengthened your art? You know, and even just you as a person, and your resilience.
I feel like it really tested the place that art has in my life. I've always been under the impression that it helps me through things. I had a joke when I was a little younger. It was like I'll never need to go to therapy because I know how to write a song, and I think that was true for some things I dealt with in life, but I have had to go to a therapist here and there. So having something really seismic occur in my life was kind of like testing music a bit, and I leaned on it very heavily, and it leaned right back. It's a thing that's always been there for me, and I don't know. I even like talk like it's a person, like I am right now. It's always there. It's something that I've worked really hard on being good at, but now it feels like it's a part of my support in a way that I created. It's like a totally unique thing. I don't really feel that way about anything else in my life. It was there and it worked. And now I just have some music that's a little more angry than what I've written in the past, but I don't really feel that way anymore. So now it's enjoyable music to play. I don't, which is odd with like people just now hearing that record. And Joshua James, we were just out on tour with him, and he's like, man, it really sounds like you were going through something. And I could almost like feel him reaching out. Like I can tell you were really mad. And I just had to tell him, like, I don't feel that way anymore, but thank you.
Yeah. Oh, we're good. Everything's good now.
I can feel him like wanting to enter into some like long conversation. And we've had some like parallels in our past that was actually more of what he wanted to talk about. But it continues to be a very, very important part of my life. In a lot more ways than just an art form that I like taking part of.
And if we can actually just hop back to, I forgot to ask you, we were talking about your wonderful daughter, what it's like for you and, you know, to be a dad on the road a lot, because you are on the road a lot. And I know there was a big stretch of time that you got to be home, but sort of what are the challenges of that, you know, besides the obvious ones?
Well, I would actually disagree that I'm on the road a lot because I know other musicians and I know how much they're on the road and I know how much they put out records. And my main gig with Gregory is, you know, it's it's very much based around the kind of output of art that he wants to have. Mm-hmm. And that's not very often. And like, you know, like the last record came out in 2012. And, you know, you do your first push of touring for a new record, and then it kind of becomes as much as you want to do in between records. And with him, I don't think it's very much.
I guess that's true. You know,
it's
thinking
a couple months, like total,
right?
Out of a
year,
it's
not that much. I'm thinking about your own, you know, band too. But you've done, I guess, more local right now. So
it's pretty local. Just beginning to look into more national Kid Reverie bookings and things like that. But it doesn't disregard your question of what it's like, because when I'm away from home, I'm away from home. And I can feel Ada, my daughter, getting more like wrapping her head more around what I do and what her mom does also. She's going to be out on tour while I'm out on this October tour, and then like Ada's going to be with grandparents and friends, and so she has just become very adaptable, and it's not always easy, but I try to keep in mind what it's like for other musicians that I've talked to who have kind of been in the game longer than me, way longer than me. Like one person told me just like right off the bat, as we began talking about our kids, he was just like, "You've got the FaceTime now from the beginning." And he talked about a moment where he came home after a tour when his kid was like 2 or 3 years old. And it was like a reintroduction had to happen. They didn't recognize him.
Wow.
That's like imagining what it used to be like. And it really helps me, because mm-hmm. I looked at my daughter's face last night.
Yeah.
From the back of a tour bus, mm-hmm. but she wanted to play the animal game real quick, and we did, which is just giving a few hints about an animal and guessing what it is. She just wanted to play, and we did real quick, and then I had to go. And if I can get a moment in like that every day, it's fine. And other times, she's not ready for it and asks to get off the phone, and that's... Yeah. She's at the age now where I just have to listen to that and say, okay.
Right.
Because she asks for what she wants now. She's cool. Like, "Dad, I'm not ready to talk right now."
She is a fiery spirit.
When it's like my only time during the day, and she's just like, "I'm playing with a friend." Like,
she's in charge.
All right. I'll talk to you tomorrow. Okay. All right.
She was also, I got to see her at Red Rocks. I was lucky to be able to be with you guys at Red Rocks. And she was just having a ball. Like, yeah. I ran into her, you know, right before you guys went on. I was out there and she said, "Hey." I don't think she knows my name, but she said, "Hey." You know, it was so cute. She was
Your name's
like,
kind of tricky. She'll get it one day. Yeah.
But yeah. So did she, I saw also the little video of her helping you load in.
Yeah.
So cute.
Yeah. Like right before that video was, I think I mentioned it in the caption of that video, just when she walked out. I didn't even realize that I wanted that moment to happen until it was happening, but she just like walked out there and she's like, "Wait, is this it? Like, this is," and she just, "Oh my goodness." It just, eyes wide open, mouth open. Like it was.
Was that her first time at Red Rocks? Did she
No,
know?
But she was
so little,
too young to remember it.
Yeah.
The other times we were telling her on the way there that she had been there. She was just like, "I don't remember that."
I think she'll remember
like,
this.
Pulled
one.
Up some pictures of her like crawling around the green room. Just I don't remember that. But yeah, it's cool to just have her like briefly walk around and get a true picture of what I do, and that it's possible.
Yes.
To do that, because like later in life when she's trying to figure out what to do, and it's, I don't know, those things are important to me.
Absolutely.
Now that like long term memories are a thing now, uh-huh. around five.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Those are my earliest memories from when I was living in Spain and I was around that age, you know, and that's what I remember that sticks out of my head from my childhood the most, actually. So yes, I think you're doing good. Right, you're doing good by her.
I've noticed a lyric popping out every once in a while in my writing that is very much advice to her. And I like picturing her later in life, like reading those lyrics and realizing that it is, or me just outright telling her later. I don't know. When she's old enough to get what that means, which God could be now. But like on the Kid Reverie record, you know, you don't, I try not to force those things or guide them too much or tell myself that, like, all right, if, you know, if you feel like you're writing about your daughter, then it needs to be a soft, nice song, easily digestible song. And the one on the record where I'm giving her advice is probably the loudest, riffiest rock tune we have on there. And I just kind of let that happen. I had a riff. I had some lyrics I liked. I was like, just put them together. It doesn't, yeah, that's fine. And it's all advice to her in the form of an intense rock song. I wanna let those things come through me naturally, and it's hard not to imagine the bigger picture of what that would be like later for her to hear those things. But I love the idea that they're kind of notes to her that she'll find later.
That's beautiful. Yeah. I'm sure she's going to just value and cherish that so much.
I hope so. I mean, yeah. There's going to be the phase where I'm not cool anymore. Course. And then I'll be cool again when she's like in her later 20s. That's fine.
I can't wait to see what she does with her life, because she's got something special inside of her, I tell you.
I agree.
So I have sort of two more topics I want to touch on. One is your Kickstarter campaign, your video, which I've watched and I just really loved. It really spoke to me. And it's actually sort of the premise behind that is why I wanted to do this podcast, is I really want to have honest conversations about who we are, you know, as mm-hmm. people, and especially as artists, being very, you know, a lot of complexities there. And I love how vulnerable you were in the video. And you talk about your stutter, mm-hmm. which I have known you for years and I had no idea you even had a stutter, that you struggle with that. But I would love it if you could talk a little bit about that, because, you know, it's kind of along lines of just being transparent about who we are and what we struggle with. And it sounds like that has been a struggle throughout your life.
Yeah, I really battled with whether or not to put it out, because it's a hard thing to explain to people that don't know what it's like. Like, I just had to pause before the word battle to get it out. There's just like a breathing thing. There's like you telling me that you never noticed it.
Right.
You don't know the mechanisms that I'm working through to avoid it, which avoidance isn't the best route. I doubt that it's the best way to handle it, but it's just become how I think about language and how I think about like the words that are coming up that I'm going to have to use when I'm choosing my words. I can do just fine. When there's words that I have to use, it's a whole different thing. And like introductions being one of them, I wrote about that in one of my what were they called in the campaign? My like updates. I wrote about meeting Ben Gibbard from Death Cab for Cutie, and he just caught me off guard and asked me what my name was, and it wouldn't come out for a moment. Those moments, I know they're not very long in the big picture, like in reality, but when I'm caught in a block like that, it's eternal, it feels like. But it was because of how that interaction went that was like one of the things that actually made me pull the trigger on the campaign, was how we didn't have to have a long conversation like we did. We didn't have to have any conversation. But because that happened at the introduction, he just like just like pulled out a chair, and we just, I don't think it would have happened that way if I didn't have an uncontrollable vulnerability immediately, right. Like right off the bat. I went over there and told him, I was like, you are one of the main reasons that I'm actually a professional musician these days myself. And he is. And I could like talk about that for a long time, but he was just like one of those like turning point people for me. And I just began to recognize what he was doing with lyrics. And there wasn't a bunch of words that had no real meaning in his lyric, which I was coming across a lot in music I was being told was popular at that time in my life. I was like, this feels really empty. And then I heard his music and I began to go on a different path on what I was listening to. So he was just one of those people. And I wanted to go tell him. And then I just couldn't get my damn name out of my mouth. And but I'm trying to process those moments way differently. I was just at a cafe a couple days ago, and the woman actually mocked me, which I don't think people are like trying to mock. But when I say Steve, like that's how it comes out a lot. She was like, "Okay, Steve." I didn't think it would ever come out of your mouth, and that has been a crushing thing for me over the years, like even into my 30s, even. But after that campaign, there was the outpouring of love and understanding, and people who've also had to deal with that in their lives, the way that came pouring to me, it's something's changing in me. And when I heard her do that, the thing that came out initially was just like, oh, have you never heard anybody that does that? And it kind of caught her off guard. And she was like, oh no, I have, a close friend of mine has, which I didn't believe her at all.
Yeah.
But it was like, oh, okay. Like, and it's like, I don't think you have a close friend with a stutter,
so
or you
hard.
Wouldn't have done that. Oh. But, but it was just this, like, whereas earlier in my life, I would have just like slunked away from that interaction.
Yeah.
Feeling like the little 7-year-old that like ran out of the classroom when I was, mm-hmm. when I was younger. Cause those things really hang around.
Oh yeah.
And you, I took it as an opportunity to tell her like, here's what you just heard.
Yeah.
Heads up for the future. Like
educate her. Yeah.
Don't.
Yeah. Oh yeah. No, I think we
it's
all
an invisible
have stories
handicap.
Like that.
Yeah. Like I get it. I get how he can catch people off guard. You're not supposed to have a hard time telling a person what your name is. So I get it. But the people who really harp on it like that, like she kept on making comments. I was just like, oh, have you never heard a person?
I'm glad I wasn't there because I would have been pissed. I would have said something. But you know,
a lot of my friends make comments like that. And I'm kind of glad they're not around when those things happen because it doesn't need to go there.
I would have said something.
I'll take it there if it needs to go there.
Yeah. But you know, I think you're touching on something that's, I just think it's so important for us, you know, to be open about our vulnerabilities, because in doing so, as you're doing, you're allowing other people to be open about theirs as well, you know, and not everybody has a stutter, but we all have our things, you know, whether it's physical handicapped or emotionally, you know, and I'm a big advocate of just, you know, being open about these things. I talk about my own anxiety and my own issues very openly. And I find that when I do, you know, I hear someone saying me too all the time. And again, it may not be the exact same issue, but just like, oh, I also have this issue, you know, and that I have to work through. And so I want to thank you for being open and real about it. And
well, I'm glad to be a part of that. I mean, it's like a part of anybody that wants to change the route of how they're thinking about those things. And because I need to hear it too.
Yeah.
I mean, I haven't had some like huge epiphany where I'm never going to have an issue with it again mentally. But it's really nice to feel like I've reached a point where it's like, this is ridiculous.
Yeah.
I reference a moment in my mind because it's the one that always pops up. I was giving a report on alligators when I was like 7 years old. And I ran out of the classroom because I didn't know what was happening.
Oh.
I went from not having a stutter at all to not being able to do the first line of this report. And like those things get so ingrained in you.
Oh yeah.
But yeah, I'm trying to create this turning point of like, it's ridiculous to feel that way now. Knock it off.
It's, oh man, it's, but it's so hard. But it's
also not being like hard on myself because you know, that's a route you could go down that's not particularly healthy probably, but it just, I'm just trying to tell my self that vulnerability is a lot more powerful than I realized. And I'm trying to figure out what vulnerability looks like in my life. And that's a big one. It's probably my biggest one. I operate heavily because of having a stutter develop early in my life. It made me think differently about like the bullying that I would see, because I was like the jock that was in marching band.
I love it.
So I got to
a little bit of both.
I got to hear the marching band kids rip on the jocks, and the jocks rip on the marching band kids, and it just it all felt pretty ridiculous after a while. And just it's, you're a product of your upbringing, and I'm trying to at least like tamp down the bad that I feel like is hanging around from that, and just talk about it. Just, and I was like laying there the night before I was going to launch that campaign, and I went through one last panic about it. I was like, you haven't let anyone else watch this video.
Oh, it's beautiful.
Does it even come across? Does it even? It was like a lot of learning about how to like trust my instincts with it,
because
no one's going to help me with that. That was the whole problem growing up, just having people tell me to, I just need to relax.
Oh, God.
Or my parents, you know, justifiably thinking like, oh, yours will go away like your brother's did. He dealt with this for a little while. Yours will go away too. And then just feeling alone in it. Like, I need to trust my inclinations with it.
Absolutely.
That's what I'm trying to do.
Yeah. I think these things we go through as children and kind of have these traumas, it takes a lot of work to get those things that chip away, you know? And I think the biggest step is actually talking about it. So, you know, I think, I mean, I have a lot of things, a lot of junk hanging around, you know, from my childhood. But I just, I just think it's what makes you a beautiful person, is being open about this stuff. So thank you. And
well, thanks. And just as like a baseline for what I deal with, like I'm glad I have it as good as I do, because I've been around some other stutterers that they don't have the choice of just like, oh, well, I'll avoid words that begin with those letters. I'll avoid that little turn of phrase because that's hard for me. I'll try and get a phone number that's not too hard to say. They don't really have a choice. So I've got it pretty good. And I actually hope to work with a lot more of those people. I had a lot of people reach out to me from like stuttering organizations that help out kids a lot, and they were already like using my video in a couple of them for younger kids to look at, and when they were just talking about identity, and it's like,
oh yeah,
you know, the first chance I get, I want to go and work with some kids with this, because I really needed that when I was younger.
Yeah, and it wasn't there for you, so you went back. Yeah.
No, I just had adults telling me I needed to relax, and I know now that that was really wrong. I didn't know then. I thought, yeah, why can't I just relax?
You think it's something wrong with you. It's not. It's like, oh, I can fix this. It's something I can.
You know, and then like later on, you like, I'm stuttering around. My dog when I'm alone. Like, I'm not nervous right now.
Thank you, Steve, for everything.
Yeah.
And so I want to just, you already sort of touched on this, but I wanted to circle back and talk about your inspirations, your greatest inspirations, both if you could tell me a personal inspiration to you and a professional one. So you started to talk about that. Can you maybe go back to that?
I think my personal inspiration is just my family. We're all very close. And when I was going through a rough divorce a few years ago, I kind of learned all over again what they mean to me. We all went through Columbine together as well. And it just, I don't know, I wish I could tell you that, like, I made friends with some ancient elder in town and we fed the ducks together and he gave me all his wisdom. And but it's just, it's my whole family as one entity that I would have to say is my biggest influence. Musically, I think the more interesting answer for this would, because, you know, I could like point out a lot of musicians whose like music I like, but I was a huge fan of Gregory's music before I ever even met him. And it continues to be kind of mind blowing to me that I get to be a part of this music. And, you know, of course this has kind of changed. I joke like, you change your clothes enough in front of a person and like the mysterious veil about who they are kind of disappears quickly. But when I think about who has really made me realize what like popular music can be like in a world where like what you hear on the radio is like very much a one-dimensional thing. And those are the people that are like really famous and they pack arenas and like your mom's heard of them. He is in this place that he has very much controlled. And I think he's a genius. I don't know what kind of genius.
Yes, he is.
I don't know. I've admitted to him a number of times and it's come out in my reaction a number of times because we've gotten to like a brotherly kind of place and his process can just drive me crazy sometimes. It's like, why are you overthinking this? Like, to me, it's overthinking. And I'm just learning over and over that he's got something in there where what comes out the end is just an absolutely beautiful song.
Yeah.
And I don't hear music like his on the radio. I don't hear music like his anywhere else than like when I'm listening to him. And I can't believe I get to be a part of it.
That's so, I'm sure he feels the same way about you. You know what, one of the things that's so special is you guys really are like brothers, all of you, you know, and
yeah.
I've been able to witness that over the years. And yeah, I think you all just really believe in each other and support each other. It's like a family, you know, and from what I can see. And Gregory is so special in so many ways. But I think what you mentioned, you know, it's not something you hear on the radio. I think it's because he doesn't make music to be on the radio. It's not what his end goal, you know.
Yeah,
he's not trying to be famous at all. And I think that is, what's so special about him. You know, people that know him because just of the raw, organic nature of his incredible music, you know, and it's found its way to them because of that, not because he's trying to, you know, scream it to everyone and be like, hey, look, pay attention to me. That's just so not him. You know, he's just doing it. He's doing it from a very like real organic place, not to be famous. You know?
So I've learned about the balance of that from him a lot, like the balance of like, yeah, you need to get a lot of eyes and ears on your music to be able to keep doing it.
Right.
But I've learned what it looks like to in a healthy way not care what people think about it.
Yeah.
And that can be hard because, you know, you can think you have the next great song that everyone's just gonna just like pass out over. And but if that's why you made it, it's probably not gonna go anywhere. And
because people can feel, you know, truth. So if you're writing, you know, just for the end goal of being on the radio and, you know, and being famous, people can feel that, you know, and I think if you're writing from a place, like a true place inside of you, which is what Gregory does, what you do, you know, and that's very palpable.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And it's what I felt from the other people who have really influenced me over the years, like Ben Gibbard or Sam Beam of Iron and Wine. who we had the pleasure of going out and touring with a little while. It's really great that people like this, but it's not why. It doesn't sound like anything else. I hear the same rhythms on the radio. It's like, I almost wonder, like, do they realize that everyone's using boom, gum, boom, gum, boom, gum, boom, boom in every song? Like, right. I guess we're all just going to accept this for a while. And all right. So then I get to go and play night after night of this music that feels really new to us also. And yeah, I just, he's going to continue to be a huge influence on me.
Yeah.
Watching like the evolution of the music too. It's been.
And you guys are neighbors too. I forgot to mention that.
Well, yeah. We live across the driveway from each other. Yeah.
Yeah. About as family as you can get the road together and the house together. It's awesome. So I'm just going to ask you a couple things and then we'll let you go.
Okay.
So can you tell me one of your favorite songs?
Future People by Alabama Shakes. Track 4 on the Sound and Color record. It just like jumped in my mind there as one of the last tracks that I begin to imagine what another person in the car, like how they would react to me turning it on for maybe the 20th time in a row.
I love that. Yes.
Just over and over listening to it. And because they had this big like bass synth drop that was so unexpected. And it was one of those moments of like, oh, you can do that shit. You can do a huge bass drop and it doesn't feel like a different genre. You can do that. And just great guitar playing and Britney's voice is unbelievable. And an awesome song.
I love that you just said track 4 on this album because
Track 4 Sound and Color. Because that's where I went every time.
Oh, but it's great. You're listening to the album too. Yeah. So you're not just like, this is a single that you listen to. So I have to ask then, what is your favorite album since we're talking about albums?
Metals by Feist this just came up a couple of nights ago. So I'll just have that answer again. It was a late night chat on the bus, but, Metals by Feist, that was one where I felt about track 4 Sound of Color. That's how I felt about just about every track of that record. I went through it and just like wore it out individually. Then I would listen to the whole record. I'd like listen to it in reverse. I love the tracks on that record. I don't know what wavelength she was on, but I was on the same one when it came out. I love that record.
That's great. Okay, how about your favorite book?
More of a short story than a book, but it's called The War Prayer by Mark Twain. It has, I think I'll probably realize one day how much it's influenced me, but I know it's a lot. It's not very long at all. I think it's a couple pages, but I got a really great copy of it with some intense drawings in there as well that really help you drop into it. But it's a town who is praying for all of its young people who are about to go out to war the next day. And they're praying for victory. They're praying for all of their children to come back, you know, healthy and safe. And this old man that nobody knows walks up to the podium at the church where they're all together. Everything's adorned in their flag. I don't think he mentions a particular country because he wanted it to be about all countries. And he goes up there and he says, you're actually praying two prayers right now. You're praying for the well-being of everyone that you love, but you're also praying for the death and destruction of countless people that you don't know. Here's the other prayer that you're praying, and it's this grotesque, violent prayer. And he's just like, I want you to know that that's your other prayer that you're praying for. And my dad and I have talked about it a lot. He always actually tries to be gone on Independence Day. Sunday around, this is more when he's been a pastor off and on over the years. He hates that time when people put a bunch of American flags at the church. He's just like, he doesn't just like one country. I know that's where we're at, and he has patriotism. He likes the country, he likes our country, but he gets really, really uncomfortable with that. And that led us to talking about the war prayer a lot over the years. And it's been a huge influence on me. I love Mark Twain.
Yeah. I love how that's kind of interweaved to your life.
He asked for it to be published after he died, which I think is also a very telling thing.
I didn't know that.
He asked for his wife to publish it after he died.
Wow.
A couple things were like that.
Wow.
Yeah.
Thanks for sharing.
Yeah.
Okay. And lastly, what about your favorite place?
I'm still finding out. I like San Francisco a lot right now because it's where my girlfriend lives. So that's nice. I also never eat bad here.
Yeah.
It's just always good. Amsterdam has a magic to it that I'm trying to pinpoint. I love being on tour.
Yeah.
I love being on tour and like speed dating the countries.
Yeah. That's what it is. I never heard description, but
that seems
pretty accurate, actually. That's what it is.
That's how it feels in Europe. It's like because of how much you're changing countries. You're just kind of like, what's this one like, kind of? what's like the 2 mile radius around the venue like?
I was talking to Jessie, you know, who does some photography for you guys about that. She was talking about how when you guys were all in Europe, how she was like, come on, get up. We're doing this. We're doing that. You know, and she's like, I don't care if we're like in the middle of the States, you know, on tour. I'm like, fine, just go to a coffee shop. But, you know, being in Europe, you want to just soak it, take it all in, you know, and.
You want to try to. But there are,
you also want to sleep.
It's like you really have to hit a balance out there. Like you can't go out every night. You can't go out every afternoon. You've got to, it's just, you have to make the choice occasionally. It's like, I know I'm in London, but I'm going to bed.
Yes.
That's hard. But in the back of my mind, I try to tell myself, like, you'll be back.
Exactly.
You'll be back. It's not going anywhere.
London will always be there.
Yeah,
for you.
Yeah.
Yeah. Awesome. Thank you so much, Steve. It's so fun.
You're very welcome. Thanks for having me.
Musings with Monse, artists and their honest stories, is audio produced by the amazing Aaron Mooring. And the beautiful theme music you hear is by Heather Maloney.